Hello, and thanks for joining us on our special Chicago Tonight coverage of the Republican National Convention. I'm Brandis Friedman. Day three of the convention is in the books, and national security and foreign policy were in the spotlight, as was former President Donald Trump's running mate, who closed out tonight's proceedings. Now, we'll hear from Amanda Vinicky. She is inside the convention center in a few moments. But first, we start our team coverage with Heather Sharon, who is in Milwaukee as well. Heather, we just wrapped up the third night of the RNC, which was newly minted vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance's big night. Of course, how did he introduce himself to the American people?
Hi, Brandis. We heard tonight from J.D. Vance when he became the official nominee of the Republican Party alongside Donald Trump. Let's listen.
And my message to my fellow Americans, those watching from across the country, is shouldn't we be governed by a party that is unafraid to debate ideas and come to the best solution? That's the Republican Party of the next 4 years. United in our love for this country and committed to free speech and the open exchange of ideas. And so tonight, Mr. Chairman, I stand here humbled and I'm overwhelmed with gratitude to say I officially accept your nomination to be Vice President of the United States of America.
Okay, so Heather, there's been a significant amount of focus today on Vance's stance on abortion. What did we hear from him on reproductive rights today?
We heard nothing from J.D. Vance on reproductive rights, perhaps because he has a record of somebody who is in favor of a national abortion ban, as well as enforcing the federal law that would prevent abortion pills from being prescribed via telehealth and sent in the mail. This is an indication that the Republicans have yet to figure out how to thread the needle of one of the most pressing issues facing the American public.
And earlier today, you also asked newly elected Illinois Republican Party Chair Kathy Salvey about her position on abortion. Let's listen to that exchange.
But I can tell you, on that issue, I know that we will adhere to the Republican platform. We are a party of the people, of freedom, and I'm very honored to be the next chairperson.
Do you support a national ban on abortion?
My position as the party chair will be to collaborate with every person who's on the ballot to support them in winning their election, and I support the Republican platform.
Heather, you didn't get an answer about whether she supports a national abortion ban. Why do you think that is?
Well, this is the same problem facing J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. They are caught between a rock and a hard place. Most Americans, polling tell us, favor abortion rights, but the Republican Party is committed to restricting abortion rights, if not with a national ban, using the 14th Amendment, which is included in the Republican Party platform, to basically redefine fetuses as people and entitling them to constitutional rights. This is an issue that, as we move to the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in just a couple of weeks and through the fall campaign, the Republicans are going to be asked to figure out an answer to their voters and swing voters who are focused on this really crucial issue.
And the theme of the night, Make America Strong Again. We know we'll talk more about that when we hear from you and others a little bit later on in Spotlight Politics. But how did Vance talk about the threats that are facing the nation?
Well, what's interesting is that they really played up his background as somebody who fought in Iraq. He said that while career politicians like Joe Biden, who has been in office basically as long as he has been alive, Donald Trump got it right. Even though Donald Trump's record on the Iraq War is a little not quite as clear-cut as he had it. We also heard him say that he would defend the country. Of course, that's the oath he would take if elected vice president. We also heard through the night from veterans, both a veteran of World War II and veterans who have served in Afghanistan, who told truly harrowing stories of the evacuation of Afghanistan and the suffering that they and their loved ones endured. It was a night where it really sort of played up the role of the president as commander-in-chief, who, of course, hopes to serve for another 4 years in that role.
Okay, Heather, thanks. We'll see you again a little bit later on in the program. But first, Amanda Venicky, she's been inside Milwaukee's Pfizer Forum this evening. Amanda joins us now with the Illinois House Republican leader. Amanda.
Yes, thanks so much to Tony McCombie for joining us. You, as everyone in this arena, has just heard from J.D. Vance, who is in the potential to rise from U.S. Senator to Vice President of the United States. What did you hear from him that you liked?
Well, it was very exciting. I heard, obviously, unity. It sounds like he is, you know, we have a connection being from the Midwest. I thought that was great. Same roots as like a lot of us. So that was exciting. The instant connection I felt.
You know, this is a time where a lot of Republicans that I talk to really feel momentum that Trump is rising. Is that something that you see him doing for Illinois, or is he a drag on the ticket, particularly in suburban districts?
Well, I think both Biden and Trump have been in the past, or have been a drag on the suburbs, for sure, in Illinois. I don't know if that's the case right now. I think because of our economy is so tanked, and that has to be to blame to Biden right now, because he's who our president is. He's our leader. So I don't see that now. I think both the Republicans and Democrats have some issues at the top of the ticket. So in Illinois.
What are you doing to try to really reach out to those suburban voters? And what districts are you playing in the suburbs?
Well, I think that we just have to get them, showing them what the difference is what's going on in the grocery store, what's going on at the gas, you know, at the gas pump. And it's really about their day-to-day life. They see it. I don't have to push that on them. It's really what's going on every day with them. So that's not an issue. The districts we're playing in is obviously the open seats, 76 and 45. That's obviously one. One that we're very interested in now is in Madison County with the slating bill that came forward with Katie Stewart's district, with Jay Keevan coming forward. That could be one that's very interesting. And then we have a few in the suburbs that we are going to be playing in.
You know, we talked earlier today about the difficulty that Republicans have had just being in the super minority. Explain what that's like. Do you feel like you're able to get your position across ever?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they always say, you know, how are you relevant? You know, you're in the super minority at 40 out of 118 seats. And I say this all the time, but we're the only caucus that represents all 102 counties. And we are able to stop bad legislation lots of times through parliamentary procedure and through the rules that they have brought forward. So, yeah, we have a great caucus. We have members that are doctors, lawyers, teachers. I mean, we have a really
good... working legislature.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, something that, of course, has been a theme of the week here at the convention, as well as the Illinois delegation, has been unity. But there's also this underlying theme, this tension that has long been propagated in the state party of division. We saw that with Don Tracy really essentially being pushed out, it seems. So what is the state of the Illinois Republican Party right now? Those quote-unquote grassroots votes aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, well, just today we had the delegation breakfast, and Kathy Salvey, who is now going to be leading our, starting tomorrow, the Illinois GOP, she had a great start to the day, and we look really forward to her bringing the party together. And
how can she do that, though?
She's going to work her tail off, you know, and hey, women do it better, that's what I say. So, no, she's going to work hard, she's going to travel the state, she knows what she's doing, and here's the thing. Illinois Republicans, and I think Republicans in general, even J.D. Vance said it, you know, we have our differences, but we can come together, we will come together, and that will happen in Illinois, and it has happened. I mean, I have a very diverse caucus of 40, and we pulled it together.
All right, we'll leave it at that and let you enjoy the rest of the evening as we've got this music carrying on.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That is House Minority Leader Tony McCombie.
Thank you.
All right, Amanda, thank you. And, of course, to Leader McCombie as well. But first, and Amanda, we'll see you a little bit later on in the program, I should mention. But first, we've got some more analysis of the third night of the Republican convention. We're joined again by Eric Nisbet, a policy analysis and communications professor at Northwestern University. Thank you again for joining us tonight. So tonight's theme, Make America Strong Again, right. Focusing on foreign policy, for the most part.
A little bit.
But not entirely. A little bit, yes. What did you hear tonight?
Well, it was interesting. The beginning of the night was, again, immigration. We talked about how it was more immigration than crime last night. It was really immigration in terms of foreign policy, sort of the invasion narrative, linking it to China, drugs. Then they shifted over to the Gold Star families, Afghanistan, energy independence, and then sort of ended with foreign policy in terms of trade. Vance's story about NAFTA, for example, and how it impacted the people around him, his community, and him personally.
Yeah, his family and his personal story. Let's, I guess, do a little bit of fact-checking because they have said that, you know, the Republicans are saying that wars were started under Biden when there were none that were started under Trump. And they've blamed Biden for the botched Afghanistan withdrawal, enabling Iran, failing to bring home the Israeli hostages who were trapped in Gaza. Frame that up for us.
On Biden, right? I mean, Afghanistan withdrawal was probably a turning point for Biden in the sense that the messiness, the loss of lives, it really did shift some narratives around Biden because Biden came in as foreign policy was his thing. He was an expert. He was going to manage crises. At the same time, that whole crisis was set up by the Trump administration. They negotiated the withdrawal, the time frame, and so really they sort of have shared responsibility for how that ended. These other crises, you know, Biden has been strong on Israel. He's been a strong supporter of Israel. Obviously, he's got a lot of flack within his own party for his position on Israel. And so that is not really, you can't really lie at Biden's feet what's happening in Israel. He's done a lot to help support Israel and bring the hostages home and support Israel against Hamas.
It seems they're also sort of positioning positioning Trump as, you know, other countries won't create wars or start conflicts merely out of respect or fear of a United States under President Trump.
And that's just not realistic, right? Russia would have invaded Ukraine regardless of whether it was Trump or Biden, right? Trump would not stop that. What happened, the Hamas attack on Israel, would have happened whether it was Trump or Biden. So it's not really realistic to think that other countries are going to suddenly stop being aggressive, stop invading others, or stop attacking others if simply you have a change in presidency. That's not how the world works.
Let's talk a little bit about Senator J.D. Vance. First opportunity for us to hear from him as the vice presidential nominee. What were your thoughts on his speech?
His speech, I mean, earlier in the night, the rhetoric was more heated. His speech was not. One commentator described it as meat and potatoes rather than red meat. It was a little lower energy than I thought it would be. So I was surprised by that. I thought it would be more energy, more enthusiasm. At the same time, he laid out his bio, which is important to introduce himself to the nation. He tried to link the negative impacts we've seen in the Midwest on manufacturing and other factors directly to Biden, and it was very populist, right? It was blaming the elites, blaming the bureaucrats. We heard that in some other speeches, right? And that really is the vision that he embraces.
What do you think the campaign trail will look like going forward for him? What else are we going to hear from him? And he has kind of resisted agreeing to a debate with the Democrats until the Democrats know who they're nominating.
Right, they're being a little cagey, right? Like who they're trying to insinuate that it might not be Joe Biden at the head of the ticket, and thus he can't commit to debating Kamala Harris. I think they're going to really roll him out in the Midwest, right? Battleground states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. He is a safe choice in the sense, or maybe more of a confidence choice. Like, Trump feels confident. He likes where he is in the race right now. The Republicans think they're going to be way ahead. They're talking about a landslide in the fall. And so he picks someone who basically aligns with his ideology, and they can roll out and speak to those, like, the base.
It seems to be like he's the choice because he represents the base, right? He is the man who represents so many of Trump supporters who are like him and maybe come from, communities like his versus Trump, who's a wealthy man and grew up wealthy.
Definitely. And the other thing that he brings to the table is he's a smart guy. He can lay out, he's going to basically move forward Trump's ideology, right? He's going to basically put it together in a cohesive way and carry that forward past sort of Trump.
Okay. All right. Eric Nisbet, you're going to stick around for us. Thank you so much because we are going to be back with Spotlight Politics. The team is in Milwaukee, of course. They're going to give us some more analysis of today's events and a look at what to expect for tomorrow right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Of course, it's been another busy day at the Republican National Convention, and that is on top of the news today that President Joe Biden tested positive for COVID. And here to talk about what you need to know is, of course, Spotlight Politics team. We welcome once again the team from Milwaukee, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharon, Nick Blumberg, as well as our guest again here in studio, Northwestern University's Eric Nisbet. Thanks, everybody. So, Heather, Texas Governor Greg Abbott took the stage this evening. Let's listen to what he said.
When Joe Biden and Kamala Harris refused to even come to Texas and to see the border crisis that they created, I took the border to them. I began busing illegal immigrants to Washington, D.C. And we have continued busing migrants to sanctuary cities across the entire country. And those buses will continue to roll until we finally secure our border.
All right, and obviously Chicago is one of those cities that Greg Abbott says he proverbially, you know, sent the border to, quote unquote. Heather, what does this mean for Chicago?
Well, it means that Greg Abbott is to prepare to send as many buses as possible to Chicago. Of course, we're only about a month away from the Democratic National Convention, and everybody at City Hall has been expecting sort of a new surge of buses to arrive in the city just in time to make getting ready for the convention much more difficult. However, it's not clear whether that will happen. For several months, the number of migrants making their way to Chicago has been steady, and the number of migrants in city shelters has been dropping significantly. So there is room for more people to come if they make it. But changes made by President Biden himself through an executive order may mean that there aren't as many people getting across the southern border, requesting asylum, and being allowed to stay in the country while their cases are finalized. That, I think, is one of the big questions facing us as we prepare to wrap up the Republican convention and prepare to cover the Democratic convention.
Yep, we'll be wrapping it up tomorrow night, of course. But tonight, Heather, there were also mass deportation signs in the crowd, or signs that were calling for mass deportations. What do you take away from that?
Well, this is an explicit promise in both Project 2025, which we talked a little bit last night, from the Heritage Foundation and the Republican platform itself. Donald Trump has promised to deport all undocumented immigrants from America, and he has said that if he can't manage to get them back to their country, he will hold them in tent cities along the border until that's possible. Now, there have been a lot of people sort of saying this would be a massive undertaking. It would be millions of people just in Chicago alone, and that it is likely not something that he could follow through. It's clear these signs were pre-printed by the Republican Party for the delegates to wave, and if that's not a sign of seriousness, I don't know what to tell you.
All right, Nick, earlier tonight, a former Illinois Republican congressman, probably known to our audience, made his case against Trump's reelection bid. What did he say?
That's right. Former Congressman Joe Walsh is one of the anti-Trump Republicans who's made his way to Milwaukee essentially to plead with moderate Republicans, heck, anyone he can convince who might be voting for Trump, I would imagine, not to cast their ballot for the former president. Here's some of what Walsh had to say.
You either believe in this moment that he is a threat to our democracy or you don't. Stop there. There's nothing else to speak about.
So clearly Walsh sees this in sort of existential terms for the future of the United States. Our colleague Matt Masterson was there reporting on some of Walsh's comments, who called Trump, quote, a jackass. He said, if you are concerned about the Constitution, about the rule of law, about preserving our democracy, you simply cannot vote for Trump. It's interesting, you know, along those lines, we heard a lot in tonight's speeches about this idea of, quote unquote, lawfare. You know, former Trump advisor Peter Navarro speaking on stage hours after being released from prison and essentially accusing, you know, the justice system of the United States of being weaponized against conservatives. Now, Walsh is one of just a few anti-Trump Republicans who've actually stuck to their guns. You know, Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis, former bitter rivals of his, who essentially, you know, bent their knee last night and made their peace, made their speeches at the RNC. So it's certainly interesting to see even folks like North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, who, you know, not necessarily an enemy, but was passed over as a potential VP there. You know, he was making a speech tonight talking a lot about energy independence. Obviously, North Dakota, a huge energy producer, perhaps auditioning for a cabinet position, secretary of something or the other. So anyhow, Walsh certainly making a fiery case against Trump. Will it take? Doesn't seem especially likely.
All right, Amanda, moving over to you, because some members of the Illinois delegation, they turned their backs tonight on Congressman Matt Gaetz during his speech. Tell us about that.
So this was not the entire delegation by any means, really just a few members. And this comes, of course, after the representative had been under investigation by a House Ethics Committee for possible sexual misconduct. And so the people from the delegation that I talked to say they believe they know the true story of what happened there, and that they believe in concert with that, that Gaetz is unfit for office, that he shouldn't be serving, and that turning their backs on him during the entirety of his speech was their way of demonstrating that, their way of showing it quietly. They say that they didn't try to bring a ton of people on board or make anything loud about it, but they wanted it to be known that out of respect for the institution that they believe is the U.S. Congress, that he should not be serving. I think that Trump's detractors would, of course, point out that concerns about any potential abuse propagated by Representative Gaetz also come as the presidential nominee and former president that these very same delegates are cheering for has been accused of doing some untoward actions toward women. That is not evidently anything, nor any felony indictments or charges evidently making the
right. He hasn't received
making
any.
Trump unfit for office in their eyes.
Correct. So, Amanda, you also spoke to Illinois delegates about, you know, tonight's events, you know, the speeches that we heard, as well as, of course, Senator J.D. Vance. What did you hear from them briefly?
Well, so again, tonight was really focused on this issue of safety and the notion of America first when it comes to energy policy, when it comes to not spending money on wars overseas. And really, that is what the delegates say they wanted to hear more of. They say, and if you have crumbling bridges in America, if you have poverty in America, don't be spending and sending that money overseas. They believe that, I know that this is something that has been talked about, but they truly, the ones that I talked to, say they believe that America would not be at war, should not be helping Ukraine, that Russia perhaps would not have invaded Ukraine had it been a Trump administration versus a Biden one. And that is the sort of notion that they embrace, that they're cheering on Trump wholeheartedly for, because they believe that if there's a change in the White House, that will be restored.
I want to get you back in here, Eric Nisbet, because we're talking about, you know, the events of tonight. And one of them, one moment that I think probably stands out in all of our minds, is the video that played right before the Gold Star right. families took to the stage. Tell me about that.
That video was very powerful. It was very emotional, talking about the loss of those soldiers in Afghanistan, talking about sort of really that whole segment was to show that Joe Biden is not up to being commander-in-chief, and that Trump understands them, he is. And that really, I think, would resonate with a wide range of people, because that was such, and it sort of tied into a statement that Biden said in the debate, right, where he talked about that it was misconstrued, right? He was talking about there's not soldiers in wars everywhere. it was misconstrued as him saying that no soldiers had died under his watch. And that was one of the claims you saw here tonight that they were saying. And so that I think, would be a powerful message and one of the key takeaways for tonight.
And certainly, like, obviously, as those families took to the stage and were speaking, a lot of, you know, wet eyes in the audience, a lot of folks on their feet sharing in that emotion, certainly a lot.
It's part of those everyday type stories they're trying to weave into the convention.
Yes, yes, lots of everyday people, families whose loved ones have served and given their lives for our country. That is where we'll have to leave it, but obviously big night tomorrow night for everybody right here. Amanda Venicky, Heather Sharone, Nick Blumberg, and Northwestern University's Eric Nisbet. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is our show for tonight. Please be sure to join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10 for the finale of the Republican National Convention. And be sure to check out our website for the very latest coverage. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm dedicated to preserving the dignity and rights of all individuals.